Okay, we're beginning here by the two dots on the top of Nun Vav and Aleph. Gemara here is discussing the statement by Rabbi Yeshua that arba'a dvarim oseh otan patur midinei adam v'chayav midinei shemaim. There are these four items that a person violates them. It's chayav midinei shemaim, but not chayav midinei adam. What it means to be chayav midinei shemaim, generally, we've seen Rashi earlier in the Masechta. There's a Rashi in Baba Metzia which says something similar, which is chayav midinei shemaim is number one, that you are not Yotze Yedei Chovato, or you do not remove the onesh from you until you actually make the payment, until you actually compensate the individual. So even though Beit Din does not have the right to take it from you, nevertheless, you are not Yotze Yedei Chovatcha until you actually pay it out. The second thing is Tafas Lo Mafkinim in Lei. It means if the other party grabs some sort of collateral or some sort of payment, we won't force him to return it because you're really chayav b'dinei shamayim. That's how Rashi formulates it in a number of places. The Marshal over here says that with regards to the chayav b'dinei shamayim, that's not the case. That's only true with regards to a chayav b'dinei shamayim when we're talking about kamalei d'rabba minei. When it comes to kamalei d'rabba minei, where the person is really obligated in both things, both the capital punishment and the monetary payment, and we just waive the monetary payment because of the capital punishment, over there, like the Ktzot HaChoshen suggests, there is a chiyuv, let's say, Yidei Shemayim. Because over there, the only reason that you're not paying for it, or the only reason that you are not liable, is because of the Kamlei D'Rabba Minei, which is overriding, meaning that there is a chiyuv, which is being wiped out, or overridden by the fact that you have a greater punishment that's associated with it. Over here, with regards to Groma v'Nizikin and other factors where you're patur midinei adam and chayav midinei shemayim, there the reason you're not chayav is because there is no leidat chiyuv. There is no chiyuv at all. You never reach a point of chiyuv. Beit Din and shemayim will take care of you because of the issues. But because of that, the Marshal claims, number one, if tafas mafkina milei, that we would force you to return it. And maybe even that there's no obligation over here, let's say, yidei shemayim, meaning that to pay the money in order to, let's say, Yidei Shemayim, maybe there's no obligation on the individual because of that, and that's only in the issue of Kamalei D'Rabba Minei. But that only in cases of Kamalei D'Rabba Minei, that is there a din of Tufa Slo Mafkina Minei, and that there's also a din of, let's say, Yidei Shemayim, to pay the money in order to, let's say, Yidei Shemayim. That's when we say Chayav B'Dinei Shemayim by Kamalei D'Rabba Minei, we say that. But over here, where it's Chayav B'Dinei Shemayim, even if tafas mafkina minei, and maybe there's no chiyuv, let's say, tidei shemayim. But nevertheless, those might be the nafkaminot, or the obligations that stem from being chayav bidei shemayim. So here, Rabbi Yeshua gives us four items. We've discussed two of them so far. Now we're about to discuss the third one, which is amamar. Hasocher edei sheker, person who hires false witnesses. Hey chidami, what exactly is the scenario here? Ilem lenafshe, if he hires them to testify on his behalf, memona bai lishlumei, then he should have to pay the money. Rashi explains over here that there was money that exchanged hands here in the case, and therefore you should have to repay the counterparty, person who he is litigating against, because he got that money illegally or improperly because he had these Edei Sheker testifying on his behalf. So that's why the Gemara says here, then even Beit Din has an ability to extract the money from him because it was taken improperly because of these Edei Sheker. And even though, as Tosfos points out, we don't know that they are Edei Sheker necessarily, nevertheless, it still should be Chayav Bidei Adam, because if we did know that they were Edei Sheker, we could extract it in a court of law. Ela, the case must be here, the Chavre, that is doing it on behalf of his friend, meaning that he hires Edei Sheker to testify on behalf of his friend and to sway the case in his friend's favor. And in that case, he is Chayav Bidei Shemayim, but Patur Bidei Adam. The Balei Tosfot over here say that if he did not pay them money, but he simply asked them to do this, then there is no din of chiyuv bidei shemayim, because then you would invoke the principle of ein shliach dvar avera, and divrei hatalmid v'divrei harav, divrei mi shomim, and that they should have listened to the law, which says that you're not allowed to have an edut sheker, and not listen to him. So where there's no money involved, then the sole responsibility lays with the false witnesses. Where there's money involved, then there's also a chiyuv bidei shemayim for this individual because of the fact that he now swayed a case in a certain direction, even though he didn't get any personal benefit and he didn't get any monetary benefit from it. So that's why he's chayav bidei shemayim and not bidei adam, because it's only groma with regards to the nizikin. Now what about the litigant himself? Why isn't the litigant himself obligated here to return the money once we know that it's edei sheker? So the Balei Tosafot say that the case has to be here, Kagon she'en lecha v'reit ma'lel shalem, either that litigant doesn't have anything to pay, o she'alach t'midin ha'tayam, or he's overseas, o k'gen she'en an'yodim she'em edei sheker, or we don't know that they're edei sheker, and therefore the litigant that's involved, who the edei sheker end up helping out, doesn't have the ability to pay, he's not around to pay, or he doesn't know that he has to pay, and therefore, in all of those instances, the party that hired them is responsible because of the fact that money changed hands improperly over here. Again, he can't be taken to a court of law because of the fact that it's only Groma ben Zikin, but nevertheless, he'll be held accountable by Dinei Shemayim because he caused the money to change hands improperly. All right, so now this is very interesting. The Nemuka Yosef over here brings down from the Ra'ah. Very interesting. He says, V'katav ha-razal, mikan nira. From our Gemara, it seems like, D'lo mi'chayvin elahai d'sacharidim amamon shein mi'chuyav lo. It's only a case where he hires them to testify on his behalf to sway the case. So in the instance, the first case where he hires Edim to lie on his behalf in order to sway the case, and therefore he doesn't have to pay money or gets money that he wasn't supposed to get. What happens if the guy hires Edim because he knows what the truth is, but he doesn't have Edim? So he hires the guys, these Edei Sheker, to basically force the case in the direction of the truth. And so that he hires Edim to say that this is what happened, even though they weren't Edim to that, but that in truth was what happened. So he says, "Enu chayav." The individual is not chayav when he does this. Ela shover al midvar sheker tirchak. It's not illegal from the standpoint of the monetary side. It's not illegal from the standpoint of having to compensate. You're in violation of naveira, midvar sheker tirchak, causing people to lie or telling untruths or producing untruths. But that's the only violation over there. In that case, the person would not be chayav, because he moved the money in the right direction. He brought the case to the true outcome, even though he did it through a lie. And that's what the Ra'ah says. Based on our Gemara, that's what it would seem like, that the only time you're chayav bidei adam is where you sway the case against what it should have been, and therefore you have to compensate because you caused the movement of the money improperly. But if you caused the proper movement of the money, then in that case, there is no chayav bidei adam. And that's what the Ra'ah is suggesting over here, that you have no monetary exposure in that case. The only exposure you have is the Isser of Midvar Sheker Tirchak. Now, the question that you're raising about the fact is, why is there a difference, the fee, Balei HaTosafot, whether you hire the Edim, where there we do say you're Chayav Bidei Shemayim, versus when you tell the Edim to do it, where you have no responsibility whatsoever. We say in the case where you tell them that it's Ein Shliach D'Dvar Aveira, Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmud, Divrei Mei Shomim, and that it exempts you completely from any liability. On the other hand, when you hire them, you are considered liable, even though you could invoke all the same principles. So the way that you possibly could answer it is to suggest that once you involve money and monetary persuasion, you become a misayel le'ovrei avera. You are actually a party to these edei sheker, and that's what brings about the obligation on you. Although the Maritz Chiyut over here, interestingly enough, says in the end, I don't understand. And he thinks the whole situation here is a situation of and therefore, why is there any culpability whatsoever? And then he says, "V'nei etzati in chadash v'yakar be'enai asher lo hitorer bo shumish." Says, "I found this great thing that nobody else has ever mentioned before." The kan yesh lanu remez miuchad. We have a special hint inside the Rambam. Zilashono Rambam beperk bet mihilchot rutzeach halacha gimel, which is et dimchem lenafshutechem zehu reget atzmo meyad kol chaya adreshenu. That's one who hires Edim to kill his friend. And in all three of those instances, Hashem will be Doresh. Hashem will ensure that these people are punished. In all these instances, they are Dinis Masur de Shamayim. V'divrei Amram Eilu Lukuchim in a Braita. That is brought from the Midrash Rabbah in Breshit. And based on that, he suggests that there is a special chiyuv min haTorah for hiring edim in order to testify falsely in a case. And that is despite the fact that it really is ein shliach l'dvar aveira, and these individuals should not be culpable, the Torah has a special chiyuv that seemingly was only said to Bnei Noach, but the fact that it wasn't repeated at Sinai makes it an obligation for Bnei Yisrael, that is that the Torah specifies, based on the Bereshit Rabbah, that there is an obligation that Hashem will ensure that this person is punished, Bidei Shamayim, if he hires false edim. It's hiring false edim to kill another party, but the Maariv Chiyuv then extends that to all false edim, and then Eino Chanami, that this Chiyuv over here does not stem from any logical Chiyuv, but rather from a Gzeret HaKatuv, that when you hire edim, or when you cause Edei Sheker to testify, that we are going to hold you culpable Bidei Shamayim. And now the Gemara moves on to the fourth case here, Zvayodea Edut Chaviro Ve'enu Meidbo. Person who knows testimony on behalf of his friend, and he does not testify on his behalf. But Maya Skinan, what exactly is the case here? Ilim Bebetre, if we're talking about two edim, Pshita De'oraitahu. It's so straightforward, it's a mitzvah De'oraita. Im lo yagid, v'nasal bono. If a person does not testify, if he doesn't do his Haggadah, which is the Edut, v'nasal bono, then he will hold responsibility for the fact that he did not testify in the case. The problem with this is, that the Gemara in Shavuot, Tosafot over here mentions it as well, darshins from this that there's a chiyuv of korban shvua, which is that if a person takes a shvua to edut, he takes a shvua that he knows no testimony, and then he's found to be falsely saying that he doesn't know the testimony, in that case, he's chayav a korban shvua. This pasuk that we are quoting from Vayikrahe is in that parshia that deals with the korban of shvua to edut. And as Tosafot notes, the Gemara says it in other places in the Gemara in Shavuot, that the only time you are culpable for nasa avuno is when you took a shvua that you knew no edut. And if you took a shvua that you know any edut, then you are obligated to bring a korban shvua to edut. But if you never took a shvua just for withholding testimony, there is no obligation. So what exactly is the Gemara quoting over here in Lo Yagid v'nasa avuno? That's not just because you withheld testimony. That's because you took a shvua that you didn't know any testimony. And that's why you're being held liable over here. Not because you simply withheld testimony. So therefore, the Balei HaTosafot say something interesting. Rashi sort of hints at this already, which he says, Pshita Doraito, it's Pshita that's me Doraito, Chaya Bidei Shamayim. That what is Doraito over here is not that you're Chaya Bidei Adam, that it's Pshita Doraito that you're Chaya Bidei Shamayim. That's so obvious that Hashem is going to punish you for what you did over here. And the Balei HaTosafot explained, Vim Tomar, Hani Milik Shavarla Shvuato. He says, Aval, Belo Shvua, Name Ika Nisiat Avon. He says that the Pasuk, if you read it in its simplest pshat, says that Im Lo Yagid, Venasa Avono. You're right, you won't be Chayav a Korban without a Shvua. The Korban or Shvuat Eidut is connected to the Shvua itself. But even without the Shvua, Im Lo Yagid, if you do not testify, Venasa Avono, then you are responsible. Venasa Avono is this type of terminology that says that God will take care of this because you withheld testimony. And that's what Rashi meant. Chaya bidei shamayim is that it's obvious in the Torah that someone who withholds testimony is v'nasavono, that he has to carry that sin with him. And thus what qualifies that additionally, it says dafka b'beitin. That's only true if you come to beitin and you deny testifying, or you deny that you have any testimony. If you simply do it outside of beitin, then there will be no such obligation because you do not lock yourself into a position where you cannot testify anymore. On the other hand, if you go to Beit Din and say that you know no testimony, then you forfeit your ability then to testify in the future because Kevin Shehigid, Shuvlo Yagid. Once you've testified in court, you do not have a right then to testify again in a different way or perjure yourself in any way. And so therefore, the Tosafot of Balei HaTosafot qualify this, that this is only a case when you deny that you have testimony in court. And even though it lacks the shvua to make you chayav in korban shvuat ha'edut, nevertheless, just the denial of testimony in court is enough to be even a savono. Whereas outside of court, you would not have that obligation. This really connects to the sugyot in shvuot, but there are rishonim, besides the Balei HaTosafot, who clearly don't say that, and Rashi neither, and think that this is an absolute chiyuv. There is an obligation to testify in court, and that even outside the context of court, that one knows testimony, then they have an obligation to go testify. What that obligation is, it's interesting here, that Nimuke Yosef, once again, quotes the Ra'ah over here, and says that the reason that we can't force this guy to testify or hold him chayav bidine adam, is v'ha v'chayivin hacha b'kovesh etohanu bidine shemaim. Av bidine adam lo, v'afilu amad d'ayin dine d'garmi. Even someone who generally says when it comes to Dine de Garmi, we will obligate you. The fish ain't adam chayav da'id de chaviro, ela mibidat gmilut chasadim. The obligation stems from the fact of gmilat chesed. There's no inherent obligation to testify on behalf of your friend. Kach ken katav ha-ra'a zal. The Ra'a that the Nimuka Yosef quotes over here tells us that the obligation to testify stems from Gemilut Chesed. And the abrogation here of not testifying or withholding testimony is a violation of Gemilut Chesed. And that's why you're Chayav B'dinei Shemayim and not B'dinei Adam. There are still Rishonim who believe that there is also a Chayav B'dinei Adam when one withholds testimony. Generally, it's only in the context of when it's done in Beit Din, even though it lacks the Shvuah. But here, the Gemara, in its simplest form, seems to indicate that there is some sort of obligation to testify when one knows testimony. The situation here is where it's one aid. Now, one aid cannot sway the case, because one aid would not finish the case off, or it would not be the trump card. The only thing that one aid can do is force a Shvuah. And since he could force a Shvuah, over here, the individual could say, listen, had you shown up in court and testified, then the other guy would have to take a Shvuah. And if he took a Shvuah, was forced to take a Shvuah, he might not have lied under oath. And therefore, we would have gotten to the truth. The fact that you didn't show up, he wasn't forced to take a Shvuah. Since he wasn't forced to take a Shvuah, we didn't get to the truth. So that's why when one individual, you can't say it's obvious or it's midoraita, because one witness is not sufficient min haTorah. Because we have a binyan av in the Torah, anytime the word aid or edut is used, it always means two edim. So the chad aid is just this ability not to close the case or to sway the outcome of the case, but simply to obligate a shvuah. And so there you are a grama, which is that you could have been goreim a shvuah, which might have swayed the case. But then when you didn't show up, all you did was not force the shvuah on this individual. And therefore you're chayav bidinei shemayim, but obviously patur Bidine Adam. Gemara says, "V'tu leka." Are there no more examples of patur midine Adam v'chayav bidine Shemaim? Va'iko. And here we're going to have a list of Tanaic works, some of which we've quoted earlier in the Masechta, some we've seen before, which is Osem Melacha b'mechatatu parat chatat. Someone who does melacha with the waters, the Maim Chayim that are drawn to make the ashes of the parat aduma, uparat chatat, or with the parat aduma itself. Then with that you cause damage or you ruin the efficacy of the Maim Chayim or the fact that this Parah Adumah could be used as a Parah Adumah. In that case, you are Patur Midinei Adam V'Chayav B'Dinei Shemayim. Now then, once the Parah is turned into ashes or once the ashes are put into the Mayim, according to the Balei Tosafot, you can no longer be posel them through Melacha, although I think the Raivah does disagree with that. Va'ika notain some of it Bifnei Be'emat Chaverot. This is something we saw earlier in the Masechta. If you put down poison in front of your friend's animal, patur midinei adam v'chayav b'dinei shemayim. Again, there you're patur midinei adam, either because shelo havelei lechol, that the animal shouldn't have eaten it, or because it's something that the animal doesn't normally eat. It's not the type of food that he would consume. So either of those two reasons, you're patur midinei adam, but you're still chayav b'dinei shemayim, because there's obviously a correlation between the death of this animal and the action, the activity that you undertook. Someone sends a fire along with the cheresh shoteh v'katan, machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, as to what exactly you sent with them. Did you send with them a coal? Did you send with them a flame? But either way, there was a certain amount of negligence over there. You're patur midinei adam, because we can't directly correlate the damage to you, because the cheresh shoteh v'katan are intermediaries there that block between the actual obligation and the damage that's done. But nevertheless, you're chayav b'dinei shemayim, because it's clear here that you put this into the hands of someone who's not responsible, and therefore your action indirectly caused the outcome over here. Vayika mavit et chaviro, someone who scares his friend, and because of scaring his friend caused some damage to him. Here you never made physical contact with the individual, and so therefore you're not going to be held accountable in terms of nezek b'yadayim, but nevertheless, you are chayav b'dinei shemayim, patur midinei adam v'chayav b'dinei shemayim, because you definitely caused damage, and the damage was connected to you. Vayika nishbara kado b'rishut rabim lo salka, case where his kad breaks in the rishut rabim, and he doesn't clear it out. Nafla gmalo v'lemida, his camel fell over, and he doesn't stand it up. Rabbi Meir mechayev b'hezekan, Rabbi Meir says you're chayav, because nitkal is a posheya, and therefore here, this is someone is mafkir nechasav achrei defilat pshia, and therefore he is chayav. Chamim marim patur b'dinei adam v'chayav b'dinei shemayim, because this is known as mafkir nechasav achrei nefilat ones. And so therefore he's not considered to be a posheya, so therefore he's patur b'dinei adam, but he's chayav b'dinei shemayim, because it's clear that his object or his possession caused the damage in the end, and that he should have cleaned it up in mia ikatuva. The Gemara says, "Eino chanami." There are many more examples of patur midinei adam v'chayav b'dinei shemayim. Behane, it's trichale. These four items, we would have had a havamina to say otherwise. Maldutema, what would have thought? Bidine shemaim lami lo lechayev. Then in each of these instances, even bidine shemaim, you should not be chayav. Kamash v'lon, that you are chayav, bidine shemaim. And so that's what the Hane Yitzrichale, Tosva questions with regards to things like the Sama Movet, as to whether that really is something that's so obvious that you're chayav, bidine shemaim. And he suggested, yeah, maybe there's not such a big chiddush in the fact that you are held accountable in that case based on this Gemara. But the key elements here are that you are chayav b'dinei shemayim. The Gemara is going to go through each of the examples to show you what you would have thought otherwise. Haporeitz ged b'fnei b'mat chaviro, someone who breaks down the gate in front of his friend's animal. Madotei ben came into the misterei koi. Since we said before, the case here is a case where it's a koto ra'ua. It's a weak wall that should have been taken down anyway. So ma'ovid. So what did he do in the end? In the end, the wall would have come down. And therefore, even in Dinei Shemayim, should not be chayav. Kamash malan, that he is chayav. That the wall could have stood for at least a short period of time, or it provided a certain amount of protection while it was up, and your taking down of the wall is an obligation, or created obligations, or hezek, that you are going to be held accountable for. Akov kameto shel chaviro nami. Also, the case of moving the items of your friend closer to the fire. So, as we explained at the end of yesterday's daf, that case is a case where it's an unusual weather, an unusual wind that comes and causes the fire to spread and catch to these items. So he says to them, listen, I had no anticipation. There's no way I could have foreseen such an outcome. So the fact that I moved it into harm's way for this unusual weather situation, that's not something I could have foreseen. I should be patur legamre. That he is chayav because he caused the item to be brought closer to the fire. According to Ravashi, who says what he did here is he covered over the property of his friend, and therefore he caused it to be tamun and not get compensated because tamun is patur be'esh. I did it for your benefit. He should also not be chayav b'dinei shemayim, k'mashman that he is, meaning that I covered it in order to slow down the fire, in order to give us a chance to save it, or to think that maybe that would extinguish the fire. So I had positive intentions in covering it. There was a negative outcome, which is the fact that when it's covered, you're not going to get compensated because now it is considered to be tamun. Tosafot over here says, v'im tomar, galui v'yadu l'makom l'man itkavein. Over here, we're talking about a chiyuv b'dinei shemayim. And we're speculating here that this guy had good intentions. In the end, we say, kamash malan, that he's still chayav. Well, whether he had good intentions or bad intentions, God will know that. And if we're talking about a chiyuv b'dinei shemayim, then why are we speculating about his good intentions or his bad intentions over here? Because Kodesh Baruch Hu will know. If it was a good intention, then he shouldn't be chayav b'dinei shemayim. If it was a bad intention, that'll be chayav b'dinei shemayim. What's this havamina here that, maybe he should be patur because he had good intentions? So the Balei Tosafot suggests over here that the person definitely had good intentions. That's not what we're worried about here. The question was that when he had good intentions, maybe that's enough to exempt him. The Kamash Malan is that despite the fact that he had good intentions, he's still liable over here because he didn't think through the situation properly. Because even though you had good intentions, you should have taken precautions or you should have taken measures that your friend would not lose out here because of Tamon Beish. So despite your good intentions, you're still chayav b'dinei shemayim because you didn't think through the situation properly. And in the end, you caused a monetary loss. It's not a direct monetary loss, but it's the fact that he won't be compensated or he won't get restitution for that which is lost to this Eish over here. So you could have thought or you could have considered it as to be not in causing your friend a loss, but simply preventing him from receiving compensation. Kamash Malan, that we look at it as a real loss to your friend, and therefore Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to keep you, or is going to hold you liable, b'dinei shemayim. In context, it's an interesting ruling because of the fact that, for instance, in America, there's a law, the Good Samaritan law, which is that if a person goes to help out another party with good intentions, and they're qualified to do whatever they're doing, they cannot be sued afterwards, or they cannot be held liable if something goes wrong, because they were doing this with the best of intentions, and they really were trying to help out. The fact that something went wrong while they were trying to help out, we're not going to hold you liable, we're saying this person really had good intentions. Now, that is only true if, number one, you're qualified, and number two is that you're doing something that makes sense. So what the Balei Tosafot is suggesting over here is that the fact that you covered it over might have been for good with good intentions, but you really didn't think through the situation, or you really didn't act in an appropriate response to the situation because of the fact that you covered it over is going to cause a monetary loss to this individual. And so that maybe even there, you're not covered under this Good Samaritan law because the fact that you had good intentions was mixed because you didn't really think through it. Your good intentions didn't lead you to a good result because you really didn't think through how you were helping him out. And so therefore, you're considered to be in some ways a little bit culpable or negligent over here because you didn't think through the entirety of the picture and only took a narrow view or a parochial view of the fact that maybe I could slow the fire down without thinking about the consequences of slowing it down in that manner. All right, now, someone who hires false witnesses, I would have thought, I should say, so therefore you should not be chayav at all. And therefore, even in Dinei Shemayim, it should not be held culpable, kamash malon, that you are held accountable. And that goes back to the Maritz Chiyut that we discussed before. If you know testimony, you don't come and testify. Mahu de tema. Over there also, I would have thought, when I showed up in court, if I had testified on his behalf, I have a mode that he would have admitted, and he would not have taken a false shvu'ah. How do you know that the counterparty, how do you know that the other litigant might not have just taken a shvu'ah sheker to deny whatever the Zayd Echad says? And therefore, there's no absolute certainty that your testimony would have swayed the case in a certain direction. And therefore, maybe you should not even be chayav dinei shemayim, kamash malan, that you are chayav dinei shemayim, because you need to put that pressure on the other litigant by forcing him to take a shvuah. If he takes a shvuah sheker, you wouldn't have changed the outcome of the case, but at least putting him in that predicament makes it or raises the probabilities that we're going to get to the truth in this situation. Therefore, you're chayav bidinei shemayim. Right now, the Gemara goes back to the Mishnah to discuss the next parts of the Mishnah. Nifritza balayla, oshen partzu alistim. If it broke out at night, or the listim broke it out. In both those cases, you are patur. Amar Rabba, v'hu shechatra. That's only if it dug its way out. Avalo chatra, mai. If it didn't dig its way out, what would be the outcome? Chayav. Then you'd be responsible for it and all the damage that's done. Hey, Chidami, what exactly is the scenario here? Ilema bakotel bari, if you're talking about it was corralled in with a perfectly good wall, something that was strong enough to keep it there, kilo chatra amai chayav, then if it didn't dig its way out and it somehow got itself out of there, why should you be held liable in that case? You did what you could. You did whatever was incumbent upon you to watch the animal. And therefore, what more could you have done in this situation? Ella bakotel ra'ua, it must be a case where it's a weak wall. When he digs his way out under the wall, why are you patur? It's a case here where you start out as a posheya because you do not have him corralled in with a proper shmira because you're using a koto ra'ua. In the end, he escaped through an onus. He dug under the wall. And so therefore, there is an onus in the end, or the way that he got out was an onus, but nevertheless, it's a tchilato b'shia b'sofo b'onus. So now, we discussed this already back on Daf Nun Bet, that generally when we have Tchilato Pshia V'Sof Bones, that we need some sort of correlation between the Pshia and the Ones, which is, if not for, because. I mean that if it was not for the Pshia, the Ones would never have taken place. Rashi over here connects the two by saying this. He says, Hadatnai Nifritza B'Layla Patur K'gon Shechatra Behema V'Hipila HaKotel the Onosu. That the case here is the case where he dug under and knocked the wall over. So it's a tchilato b'pshia, which is the fact that you have a koto ra'ua. The sofo b'onis is that it dug under the wall and caused the wall to collapse. So there is a correlation between your pshia and the onis that's there, because in the end, the chatira, the digging under the wall that caused the wall to collapse, was a result of the fact that it was a weaker wall. It had it been a koto bari, he might not have been able to collapse the wall by digging under the wall, even though, again, it's unusual behavior. And so therefore, Rashi correlates or connects between the Pshia and the Ones by saying that the Pshia is what contributes to the fact that the Ones has impact over here, which is digging under the wall, causes the wall to fall over. So that's the way that Rashi interprets it in order to have that correlation between the Pshia and the Ones. There are other Rishonim, the Shita Tara'a, who do not believe that you need such a tight correlation between the Pshia and the Ones, but rather you just simply need the same outcome, meaning that the Pshia here would have resulted in the animal escaping, and the chatira also results in the animal escaping. So even though there's no direct correlation between the pshia itself and the ones, nevertheless, the end result is the same, which is the animal escapes. And so therefore your tkilata b'shia v'sofa b'ones would still be negdar that way, because both of those activities would result in the same end game. So the Gemara says, "Anichal amanda amar tkilato b'shia v'sofa b'ones patur." That would work well according to one who says tkilato b'shia v'sofa b'ones is patur. Then you can explain the case in the Mishnah that way. That's why it's patur. Elamanda amar tkilato b'shia v'sofa b'ones chayav ma'ikal ameimar. What exactly is the scenario here? Elamatnitan b'koto barit. Our case in our Mishnah is a case where it's a full, good, stable wall. V'afil lo chatra. And even a case where it didn't dig under. V'chi itmar d'rabba ha-seifa itmar. And Rabba's statement is made on the seifa. So therefore, the reason that you're patur by nifritza b'layla or partzu alistim is not because of tchilato b'shev sofa b'enis is patur, but rather simply that you did whatever was incumbent upon you. And now when it escaped at night, like the Balei Tosafot said on yesterday's daf, we're either not going to obligate you to run out at night and chase it down, or that it's unlikely that you're going to know the information. It's unlikely that you're going to hear that the animal escaped at night. And so therefore, we're not going to obligate you for what happens until you can be notified and you have the time to go out and recapture the animal. So for those reasons, you are patur over here, and patur alistim is because they're only groma benizikin. They're knocking down the wall and letting the animal out. There's only groma. They are not directing the animal out. So that's why in those cases, they are pturim. Both the listim and the balim are pturim in those cases. But now, the case that Rabbah spoke about is henicha b'chama. Osh masra l'cher shoteh v'katan v'yatzta v'zika chayav. The latter part of the Mishnah, which is that he leaves it in the sun, or he gives it over to a cher shoteh v'katan, and then it escapes and does damage, he is chayav. Amar Rabbah v'afilu chatra. That's even if he dug under the wall. Meaning that even if the animal escapes in such a manner that you would not have anticipated, and is something that is unusual, nevertheless, you'll be held responsible. Lomi b'yehecha d'lo chatra. In a case where he didn't dig under the wall, clearly you are culpable, you are liable there. The kula pshiyahu. That is complete negligence, because either you gave it over to parties that are not responsible, or you left it out in the sun in a situation where the animal is clearly going to escape. Ela filu chatra nami. But even if it digs under the wall, which is an ones, which is unusual behavior for the animal, you might have thought that this is a case of tchilato b'pshia, and then in the end it's sofa b'ones, because the pshia is how you handle the animal, either putting it in the sun, which is going to torment the animal, or giving it over to irresponsible parties. So that would be the tchilato b'pshia. The sofa b'ones is the fact that it dug under the wall. So then it wouldn't have mattered who was watching it or what the circumstances were. That if it dug under the wall, that is something that's out of your control. So maybe you should be patur. K'mashmalan d'kula pshia hi. The answer is that it's complete negligence from beginning to end. My daima, damale, made the adat, the came into shavakta b'chama, you should know that if you leave the animal out in the sun, kol tatzdaka d'hitle the mevad avda b'nafka, any tricks, any possibilities or opportunities that the animal has, it will use to get out of that circumstance. You put the animal in a predicament which is so torturous to the animal that the animal will do anything to get out of there, even act in a way that normally would not be becoming of such an animal, which is to dig under the wall or to escape in such a manner. But when it's put in that predicament, it will use whatever is at its disposal to get out of there. And therefore, that's why over here you are liable for what's going on, even though it ends up with quote-unquote an ones, the case of chatra. And so, this would only answer the question with regards to leaving in the chama. With regards to cher shoteh v'katan, there you're going to be chayav, because either Rashi says you failed or you're negligent in your responsibilities because you handed it to someone who cannot watch it, or the Balei Tosafot say that the cher shoteh v'katan are actually contributory to the negligence that's happening, meaning that they will actually cause there to be a lack of shmirah. Not only are they not watching the animals, they actually cause the animal to go out, because they'll cut the rope, they'll help the animal escape. They'll do things that actually will accelerate the problem. By cher shoteh v'katan, that would be the reasoning, versus b'chama, the reasoning being that it is a complete pshia, which will lead to outcomes that normally are considered to be ones, but in this case will be all part of the pshia, the negligence of leaving it in the sun. Utziya listim, listim chayavim. If the listim take it out, they are chayav. Where it says, pshita, kevin daf gua, kaimala bishutayu, chol mile. Since they took it out, it's their responsibility. It should be in their possession for all problems that happen. Now, Rashi explains what that means. Why is it in their responsibility, or why are they considered to be the parties that are liable over here? It's because ika mishicha, they pulled the animal out, vishinei rishut, and they took it out of the possession of the owners. So, that's a full-fledged kinyan. a kinyan that involves shinui reshut and mishicha, which is a kinyan and shinui reshut, that is something that will change ownership from the baalim to the people that are stealing the animal. And therefore, they become the full owners of the animal. Full ownership of the animal means that you are responsible for everything the animal does. That's both the damage that happens to the animal, as well as the damage that the animal does. And that's why, according to Rashi, these listim are on the hook, and why it's so pshita to us that they should be on the hook. Now then, the Balei Tosafot over here say that when they take it out, it has to be a case where they're taking it out to steal it. That's based on the Yerushalmi. Tosafot says that the only time that they are liable is when they're taken out specifically to steal it. Then, Tosafot says, Vim tomar minale de kaima bishutayu, afilu litchayeva mashi mazeket. Okay, we understand that there's a certain amount of kinyan here, a certain amount of responsibility here, maybe if the animal gets damaged. But how do you know that it's so much in their possession that if the animal goes out and damages, that they're going to be responsible for the damage that the animal does? And he says, if you want to tell me that's the equivalent of giving an oter, a shomer chinam, or a shoel, and that they step into the shoes of the balim, and so too a gazlan will step into the shoes of the balim, that's not necessarily true. And he brings proofs from other places in Shas, where there are certain dinim that are applicable to a shomer, where he has responsibilities, and a gazlan does not have those responsibilities. So why is it so obvious to you that the gazlan picks up these responsibilities over here? And he says in the end, Veishlamar, Disvoru, the gazlan nechnas tachar abalim. It is logical to assume that the gazlan here steps into the shoes of the balim. The kevin shotzim reshut abalim, shayu chayavim bishmirata. They took it out of the possession of the balim, who were obligated at that point to watch it, take care of it, and ensure it doesn't do damage. Veina balim yochlim l'shomra. The fish nigzalamim. At this point, the balim have no capacity or means by which to watch the animal because you took it away from them. Yeshala gazan l'shomra. That balut with regards to an animal going out and doing damage is the person who has the capacity, the ability to watch the animal and prevent it from doing damage. Over here, the parties that can do that are the gazlanim. The balim no longer have that ability. Since they don't have the ability to stop the animal or to ensure that the animal doesn't do damage, we can't hold them liable. On the other hand, the gazlanim, who have the animal in their possession, and they can watch the animal and they can prevent the animal from doing damage, it will become their responsibility to prevent them from doing damage. If they don't prevent them from doing damage, they will be responsible for the damage that that animal does. And so Tosafot says that the obligation stems from the fact that the balim are knocked out of the picture by the gazlanim, and they basically take over because there's no one else to take over here. The case here is where there was a kinyan mishicha, but even with that, Tosafot doesn't understand. It might obligate them for damage that happens to the animal. Why does it obligate them from preventing the animal from doing damage? That's Tosafot's question. Rashi says, that kinyan mishicha and that shinui reshut makes them like the balim. They become like the owners of the animal, and they're fully responsible for it. Tosafot says, I don't understand. I can understand that they are responsible for damage that happens to the animal. I understand that they're responsible to return the animal. What I don't know is, where do you have a source, or where do you have a proof that this type of kinyan of a gazlan is sufficient to obligate him to prevent the animal from doing damage to third parties? Where does that come from? Where do you know that a kinyan mishicha is sufficient? So Tosafot says that he thinks it's a logical argument in the end, because you've knocked the balim, who are the shomrim, out of the picture, you by default become the shomer of the animal because you're the only one who can be shomer of the animal. And because you're the shomer of the animal, your negligence in not being shomer of the animal makes you chayav. This goes back to what we discussed earlier in the Masechta, what's the obligation for nezek. Over here, Tosafot is towing that line again, that it's the negligence for not watching it, the shmirah itself, which generates that obligation. And so therefore here, the gazlanim become the shomrim of the animal. And where they're negligent in that shmirah, they become responsible for the nezek that the animal does. All right, so now the Gemara continues and says, Lo, tzricha de kamalu abba'apa. The case where they did not do a kinyan mishicha, they did not physically touch the animal, they simply stood around the animal. They forced the animal to walk in a certain direction by surrounding it on three sides and only leaving one side open. Ki'ad amarabo amarav matna amarav. Similar to this statement of Rabba Amarav Matna Amarav Hamamid Bemat Chaviro Kamat Chaviro. Someone who takes his friend's animal and puts it by the food or vegetation of his friend, Chayav, he is responsible for what the animal eats over there. Mamid Pshita. Of course, if he takes the animal over there physically and he has the animal eat whatever is there, it's clear that he should be Chayav. So can't be simply that he's Mamid, that he actually puts him there, or if he's feeding him the food. Hello, Tzricha de Kamle Ba'apa. It's a case similar to what we're seeing over here. It's a case where he totally surrounds him, and in surrounding him, it forces the animal to go in a certain direction, even though there's no physical contact between the individuals and the animal itself. So Amalei Abai the Rav Yosef, Hikisha Amartnan. Abaye tells Rav Yosef, remember, Rav Yosef fell ill during his lifetime, and he forgot all the Torah that he learned, and his Talmidim, especially Abaye, reminds him about what he taught before, and that's what Abaye says over here, that, wait a minute, Rav Yosef, didn't you explain to us that the situation, the circumstance over here is a case where Hikisha, where they hit the animal, Vilistim Namedi Kushua, and that would be the similar case here, but the Listim is a case where they're driving the animal. That's what Rashi says over here, that the Hikisha of a Makel, when you hit it with the stick, Amar Lan Bahayi the Mamid Umushim Hachi Mechayiv. That is what's called Mamid. It's the equivalent of doing a Kenya Meshicha. It's the equivalent of taking the animal physically and putting it there when you drive the animal in a certain direction. Now, two things to discuss here. The first of which is when the person takes an animal and puts it on someone else's property and has them eat from someone else's property. That means that Mr. A goes ahead and takes animal that belongs to Mr. B and then feeds Mr. C's food. So over here, A doesn't own the animal. He doesn't own the food. All he's doing is taking B's animal and putting it on C's food and having him eat it. What is the chiyuv there? Or why is he responsible? The Balei HaTosafot say that he is responsible because of Shein V'Regel. Now, they do say that maybe it looks a little bit like Aish, where you're responsible for sending something or putting something into motion. But nevertheless, he's not so comfortable with the fact that it's Bari Chazeka and that it should be exactly like Aish. On the other hand, he has a difficulty with Shein V'Regel because the Pasuk says, Bishilach et Bi'iro, that he sends his animal, which sounds to sound like it's your animal, not when you do it with someone else's animal. Therefore, the Balei HaTosafot in the end say that, you know what, it really is because of Shein and Regel. And despite the fact that it's not yours, but because you are the direct cause for whatever happens over here, you're obligated as if it is yours, or we deem it as if it is yours in this situation. And therefore, the Balei HaTosafot say it is Shein and Regel. And that means if you did it in the Reshut HaRabim, you'd be Patur. Because Shein and Regel are Patur Reshut HaRabim. And you can see that at the end of the Tosafot, Im Kei Mitam Zevele L'Chayev Afilu Reshut HaRabim, if you thought it was Bari Chazek and it was a Din and Eish, V'lo Mishtama Meshum Tochta L'Chayev Reshut HaRabim Shein, Afilu Mikarei Bimto Etzol Perot Mamida Alayu. So it says we don't find such a thing, and they are Patur Reshut HaRabim for Shein and Regel. And he thinks that the obligation here stems from Shein and Regel, despite the fact that the Torah says it has to be yours. Here it's not yours, but it's deemed to be yours because of the activity or the action that you took that causes the animal to eat. On the other hand, the Rashbo, if you look over here, says that the din here is because of Adam HaMazik. You're basically an Adam HaMazik when you take the animal and put it directly next to the food of your friend. You are an Adam HaMazik, and for that reason, it's as if you are machila b'yadayim. It's as if you're feeding the food directly and sticking it into the mouth of the animal when you bring the animal and put it right on top of whatever food that is there or onto the fields of a third party. That is your responsibility because of mazik b'yadayim. And therefore, he argues on the Tosafot. You can see that in the small aleph of the Gra, where he says that which the Tosafot says here. He says, Aval Rashba pasak t'chayav. The Rashba says you are chayav b'shut harabim because the chiyuv here is not because of Shein and Regel, but rather because of Adam HaMazik. The next thing to discuss here is what exactly is going on with the Hikisha. When you actually hit the animal or drive the animal, what is accomplished over here? So Rashi claims that the situation is whether you hit the animal or you drive the animal. And driving the animal is the equivalent to doing a Kinyan Mishicha. So that's one way to deal with this, and to suggest that this is another alternative or another way to accomplish the Kinyan Mishicha. One way is to pull the animal to you. The other way is to drive the animal in front of you. The only thing that's interesting about that is that when it comes to Kinyan Mishicha or the driving of an animal, for instance, in Shabbat, where it's asur to be mechamer, over there, there's also another possibility, which is that if you can use your voice to encourage the animal to move, that will also function, number one, as an ability to make a Kinyan on the animal. And number two, you'll be chayav for being mechamer, causing an animal to move or go in a direction or do work on Shabbat. If you use your voice or by calling the animal, you cause it to do that. So then why is that absent over here? Why do you need it to actually hit the animal? Why don't we just say that he called the animal? The Me'iri over here makes a chiluk, which is important, which is that in a case where there are two parties to the kinyan, which means that there's a granting party and there's a receiving party, there simply calling the animal or driving the animal with your voice is enough of an action to have the kinyan go through. Also hitting the animal, driving the animal, or pulling the animal. But when it comes to stealing the animal and you want to have a kinyan, you need a kinyan that has enough significance to overcome the lack of a makneh over here. The owners are clearly not trying to give you the kinyan here. You are accomplishing the kinyan because you are a gazlan without the permission or without the aid of the original owners. And therefore you need a maise chashuv. You need a significant action over here for it to be considered a kinyan. And therefore you need hikishua. You need to actually drive the animal in order that it's significant enough to make it a kinyan. And using your words or your voice would not be sufficient in this case because of the lack of a makneh that is granting you the rights over here. And that's how the Ravid terms it over here, that the kinyan happens not because you're actually doing a kinyan mishicha when you drive the animal, but rather because you are doing a maseh that is nikar, a maseh that's nikar biyadayim, and that's enough to generate the obligations or the kinyan, not because it's actually doing a kinyan mishicha, but that demonstration of ownership or of action connects you directly to the animal or to what the animal is about to do, and therefore you become liable because of that. All right, now the Gemara moves on to next. Masral ro'eh nechnas ro'eh tachtat ha'balim. If you give it over to the shepherd steps into the shoes of the balim. Amrei tachtav deman. Who is he going in place of? Who is he replacing over here? Ilim tachtav de balabema. If you're telling me that he's going to replace the owner, then tanina chada zimna. We already had this in a Mishnah earlier in the Masechta. Masral the shomer chinam the shuel the nosei sachar the socher kulam nechnasu tachtav balim. Give it over to any one of the four shomrim. Those shomrim take the place of the balim, and they have the same responsibilities as the balim. So if that's the case, why do I need you to tell me that when you hand it over to a ro'eh, that he has the same responsibilities as the balim? He fits into one of these four categories over here, and therefore, of course, he's going to step into the shoes of the balim. Ela tachtav de shomer is praising the shomer. That means that we have here a shomer, shemasar the shomer. Someone was taking care of the animal, now he passes it on to another party. And when he passes it, the shomer, to a second shomer, the first shomer then is discharged from any obligation. He removes himself from the situation, and the second shomer that he passed it to now takes over for him and becomes fully responsible. Or says, let me dive into yufta the rova. If you are going to express the mission that way, it's going to be a strong refutation of the position of rova, which is shomer, shemasar, yama rova, shomer, shemasar, the shomer, chayav. If you are a shomer and give it over to another shomer, you are chayav. Now, not only are you chayav in the normal responsibilities you have as a shomer, you then become fully responsible for everything because you are negligent then in passing it over. You did not have a right to pass it over to this other shomer because the original balim considered you. I believed you, I trusted you, and I would accept your shvuah. This other guy that you handed it to, I have no relationship with him, I don't trust him. And therefore, it was negligent for you to pass it on to him, and you're going to be fully responsible for giving it over. And then you become chayav and onsin and everything. So that's what Rava says is chayav. If you explain our Mishnah as a case where the shomer passes it to another shomer, and the first shomer is completely discharged of any obligation, that's the opposite of what Rava says. So the charava, my masro the ro'eh, the barzilei. Now, when we say here masro the ro'eh, it doesn't mean he gave it over to the shepherd, but the shepherd gave it over to his apprentice. The orche the ro'eh, the mimsa the barzilei. That is normal behavior or expected behavior. When you hand something over to the ro'eh, to the shepherd to watch on your behalf, you know that he has people working for him. You know that he has apprentices. So you assume, or you are comfortable with assuming that those that are acting on his behalf are equivalent to him. And therefore, when he passes it over to that party, you are, that party now steps into the shoes of the ro'eh and becomes fully responsible for the animal back to the balim. Because this is something you can expect. It might be true also when you hand over a pikadon or some item to a person, you would also expect that the family members would also be involved. And therefore, the family members are equally acceptable to you as the individual himself that you handed over to, because that's normal context in which you deal with a person is their whole household. Same thing when you deal with the ro'eh. You're dealing with the ro'eh and his whole company, not just the ro'eh himself. So wait, the Mishnah says that he gave it over to a shepherd and not to just any third party. Shmai mina, my masra the ro'eh. What does it mean that they give it over to a shepherd? Masra the ro'eh, the barzilei. Dorchei the ro'eh, the mimsa, the barzilei. That the scenario in the Mishnah is a case where the ro'eh gave it over to his apprentice, because that's normal behavior for the ro'eh to give it over to his apprentice. Aval le'acher, though. But if he gave it over to any other party, that would not work. Lema misaylei the ro'eh. That would be a support of Rava's position, which is only in this unique scenario do we say that when you give it over to the barzilei or the ro'eh, are you pator? But in a normal case of Shomer Shemasa the Shomer, you would be Chayav. That's supportive of Rava. Amar Shomer Shemasa the Shomer Chayav. Amre lo. That's not the case. Dilma Urcha the Miltok Tani. Maybe the mission is giving you just a normal scenario. Normal scenario is that the Roeg gives it over to his Barzilei. But that's not coming to preclude a case where someone else gave it to a third party or a most shomer gave it to another shomer. Maybe over there you would be patur. And therefore the Mishnah can't be a proof to Rava, may not be a question on Rava, but it's also not a proof to Rava's position. Ki'itmar. So now we move on to a new situation or case. This is a Gemara that's found in Bava Metzia, Shvot. We also bumped it into Nedarim, which is Shomer Aveda. Someone who finds something, and now the Torah commands that when you find something, you cannot find the owner of the object, that you take the object into your house, and you take care of it until you can find the owner. That person who's taking care of the Aveda in the interim, what is his status? Rabba Amar Kishomer Chinam Dami. This guy is a really good guy. He's doing a nice thing. He's doing a favor for this individual. And while watching the item and taking care of the item, he's also doing that as a favor. He's not getting paid for it. And therefore, he's a shomer chinam. Rabbi Yosef Amar, ki shomer sachar dami. He has a din of a shomer sachar. He says, if he is a paid shomer over here. Rabbi Amar, shomer chinam dami. My hana'a kamati le. The reason he's a shomer chinam is what type of compensation, what type of benefit is he getting from what he is doing? There is no consideration coming back to him for the fact that he's watching this Aveda. He has to do it because the Torah told him to do it, but he has no compensation for it, and that's why he's a Shomer Chinam. Rabbi Yosef Amar Kishomer Sachar Dami. The reason he's a Shomer Sachar is because he's actually making some money. He is getting some consideration over here, which is, Bayana, the lo baila mitveh le riftol aniya, since he will not have to give now money when the ani knocks on his door to come and collect tzedakah, since he's now involved in the mitzvah of a Shavat Aveda, he will not have to go to answer the door or give money to the ani at that point in time. Therefore, Avi Kishomer Sachar. That, quote-unquote, savings of money that he doesn't have to pay out, tzedakah, in that instance, is the equivalent of some sort of schar, and therefore he is responsible like a Shomer Sachar because he gets benefit from the fact that he's being a Shomer Aveda. Now, Ika de Mefarshe, Rabbi Yosef Amar, Kishomer Sachar Dami, the reason he calls him a Shomer Sachar is, came in the Rachman Shabdei Bal Korche, the Torah forces you or compels you to do this even against your will, Hilkach Kishomer Sachar Dami. Therefore, you're considered to be a Shomer Sachar. I mean, a Shomer Chinam does this gratis. He does this because he wants to generate goodwill or because he has goodwill for this person. Over here, they're not doing the Shomer Avidah, and you're not taking care of the Avidah because of any good feelings that you have. You're doing it because the Torah insisted that you do it or compelled you to do it. Being compelled to do something or encouraged to do it because you're getting paid is the din of a Shomer Sachar and not a Shomer Chinam. Now, there's a very, very important Tosafot over here, which is, what exactly is this idea of what's called Pruta de Rav Yosef? This idea that you have some sort of savings of money that is generated by the fact that you're taking care of this Aveda, which then precludes you from being able to do the mitzvah of tzedakah, and therefore you save money. Why is it that it precludes you from doing the mitzvah of tzedakah? Tosafot over here is very troubled by this. He says, what happens? You have this aveda in your house for the next 2 years. Therefore, you don't have to give any tzedakah. Any ani that comes to the door, oh, patur, I'm osik b'mitzvah. Tosafot says, what's the difference between that? Wearing tzitzit all day, having a mezuzah on your door all day. Anytime you have a mitzvah that you're involved with, all of a sudden you get a patur, and now you don't have to do any other mitzvot. He says, that makes no sense. And therefore, the Tosafot narrows the definition of osik mitzvah, potur mitzvah, first of all, to be a case where you're actively involved in the mitzvah. That means that if the Aveda is just sitting in your house, you're not osik mitzvah, potur mitzvah, because you're not osik mitzvah. You're not involved with the mitzvah. Osik mitzvah means in the case where you have some tablecloth that you found, and you have to shake it out every once in a while to clean the dust off of it. Only when you're doing something actively in terms of taking care of the Aveda, will that grant you the exemption with regards to other mitzvot? So that's the first thing Tosafot says. In order to get out of this problem of maybe you do mitzvah tzitzit, you do mitzvah mezuzah, you're potter from all the mitzvot, you're going to do one mitzvah your whole life because now you're potter mikola mitzvot. So that can't be. It's not possible or plausible to think that way. And therefore, osik mitzvah, potter and mitzvah is only in a scenario where you are engaged in the mitzvah. The second thing the Balei Tosafot say over here, which is hotly contested by other Rishonim, is the fact that Osek mitzvah, Potter mitzvah only applies by Ef Shar the Kayim Shnehem, when it's impossible to keep both of the mitzvot. It's a case where you're limited to doing one of the two mitzvot over here, and therefore you have to make a choice. In that case, Osek mitzvah is Potur Min HaMitzvah. But if you have time to do both mitzvot, even though they came up simultaneously, nevertheless, you will not have the exemption of osik mitzvah, potur min mitzvah, because we just say, do this one now and do the other one later, or vice versa. And since you can accomplish both mitzvot, there's no exemption of osik mitzvah, potur min ha-mitzvah. Seemingly, the two should be correlated, which is that being busy with the mitzvah is what precludes you from doing the other mitzvah. And that, the Baalei Tosafot say, is only true when you cannot accomplish both mitzvot, because Tosafot basically views Osek mitzvah potur mitzvah as being a dechuya. It's an exemption when there's no other choice. But if there's another choice, we're going to opt for you keeping both mitzvot or trying to accomplish both mitzvot. Now then, in the Gemara and Sukkah on Daf Chav Hei, the Gemara there discusses the issue of Osek b'mitzvah, potur min ha-mitzvah. And there, many of the Rishonim have formulations that differ from that of the Baalei HaTosafot over here. I'll just read you the Ran, who is really summarizing what you see in the Ritva and in the Or Zeruah. He says this, the fikach nearly, the osek b'mitzvah, potur mitzvah, af al pi she'yachol lekayem et shneihem. Even if you have the ability to accomplish both mitzvot, you have a right, if you're osek in one mitzvah, to dismiss the other mitzvah, and then you don't have to go back to it. Be osek b'mitzvah arminan, velo mekayem mitzvah. Umisha abdai itzlo, af al pi, umisha avedai itzlo, like our case over here. Af al pi shu mekayem mitzvah, enu osek ba. You're not involved with it. Ela b'shar sheminara letzarcha. Even though you could do both of them, maybe you could shake out the cloth, the hand, the ani, the coin at the same time. Nevertheless, you're patur, because once you're osek b'mitzvah, potur mitzvah. So the Ran over here accepts the one piece of Tosafot, which is you have to be osek b'mitzvah to be patur. But he doesn't accept what the Baalei Tosafot is, that it's efshar lekayim shneihem. He says, even if it's efshar lekayim shneihem, once you're involved in a mitzvah, there is no obligation to engage in another mitzvah. You become patur, but patur in a sense that you don't have to go back to that mitzvah. You are patur as if it's hutra, that that mitzvah never existed or you never had an obligation to do it. Behind no time at the miftar achmanach. Okay. So that's the reasoning behind the Ran. There are other formulations, that are similar to the Ran's, but have little nuances to them, including that of the Ritva and the Or Zeruah, who suggest over here that even if you are involved, the Ritva says here, "Beish lamar daha kamashvan dafilu bayla niach mitzvah zo lasot mitzvah cheret gedolah hemena ena reshut biyado." That this idea of osek mitzvah potur mitzvah is even when there's an imbalance. Say there's a much bigger mitzvah for you to do, like Korban Pesach or Brit Milah, other types of mitzvot. If you're osek b'mitzvah, you are patur min ha-mitzvah, you do not have to put down the mitzvah that you're engaged in order to do the bigger mitzvah that is there. And that came into kamashvan, that came into patur min ha-cheret, heyuetz lo achshav kedavar shel reshut, ve'asur laniach mitzvato mipnei shavar shel reshut. Since you're an osek b'mitzvah, the other mitzvah now becomes optional or a reshut. It's no longer a mitzvah for you. And therefore, you are now restricted from leaving the mitzvah you're in order to go do something that's optional, or something that's chulin. Because if you're osek b'mitzvah, how could you give up a mitzvah to go do something that is mundane in nature? And for that reason, you can't leave the mitzvah in. Da'afgal dikale mitzvah kavua lezman, v'dai kagon kriyat shema u'shchitat pesach, v'kodem lechein batlo mitzvah acheret, shinit batalnu min acheret im yetchil ba. If you start this mitzvah, you're going to lose out on kriyat shema, you're going to lose out on pesach, which have time limits or a limited type of mitzvah. Rashayu la'atchil ba, v'zu sheba liyado achshav. You can start the mitzvah that comes to you first. And if you lose out the other mitzvah, no problem. So that's the way that the Ritva formulates it. That osek b'mitzvah, potur mitzvah is really, really changes the other mitzvah as if you don't have any obligation whatsoever. To the point that if you choose to start a mitzvah, that will exempt you even from a mitzvah that is time limited in nature, or even a mitzvah that's much greater than the mitzvah you're involved with. As long as you're osek b'mitzvah, you are potur min ha-mitzvah. So unlike the Baalei Tosafot, view it as a dechuya, you see the Ran, the Ritva, formulating it as a hutra, and with other nuances, like what the Ritva suggests over here, that once you engage in a mitzvah, you can even start a mitzvah knowing that it will knock out another mitzvah, because of the fact that it's hutra. Once you start a mitzvah, all the other mitzvah become reshut to you, and they cannot override what you are engaged with at this point in time. All right, Eitvei Rav Yosef the Rabbah, Hekzira lemakom shir ena. If he returns it to a place where the Baalim will notice it, enu chayav letapel ba. He doesn't have to deal with it. Nignavo of Avdo, if it was stolen or lost there, chayav b'achriyota, he's responsible for it. My nignava o avda. What does it mean it was stolen or lost? Lav nignava mi beito, v'avda mi beito. It was lost or stolen from his house. So therefore you see that he's a shomer sachar, because a shomer sachar is chayav in gneva and aveda. Whereas a shomer chinam is patur mi gneva and aveda. And here we're talking about a shomer and aveda. that's returning it to the Baalim. If he returns it to a place where the Baalim will notice it, then he's discharged his obligation. If he keeps it in his house and it's stolen or lost, he's responsible. That makes it sound like he's a Shomer Sechar. It says, well, Mimakom Shech Zira. If it's stolen or lost from the place that he returned it to, then he's responsible. It says, wait a minute. Did you just write that he doesn't have to deal with it? If once he does that, he's discharged his obligation? He returned it in the afternoon. And it's really a bifurcated din over here. This is what it means. If he returns it in the morning, a place where the Baalim will certainly see it. Because the Baalim always go out in the morning to go to work, to go to shul, whatever it is. They're going to clearly see the object. And therefore, you can expect that they will see it. But you've done your job and returned it to the original owners. If he brings it into a place where the Baalim should see it, but you do it in the afternoon when the Baalim are not normally around. Certainly in the middle of the day when they're not around. But here in the Tzaraim, sometimes they come home early. But nevertheless, it's not common. And therefore, they're not necessarily going to trip over it or see it on their way in. The lo chazila, and he won't see it immediately. Nignava o avdo, if it's stolen or lost from there, chayav b'achriyuta, you're responsible for it, because you did not return it to a place where the Baalim would immediately come across it or see it very soon after you're leaving it there. And therefore, you retain responsibility for the aveda. So that's why there's a difference in the din, depending on when you return it to the Baalim and how quickly they will know that it's been returned to them. That will deal with whether you are patur the gamre or whether you're chayav for gneva aveda. But it's not because a shomer aveda is considered to be a shomer sachar. It's not because whether you did something responsible or you did something irresponsible. If you return it in a place where the Baalim will see it immediately, that's responsible behavior, and therefore you're patur. If you irresponsibly left it in a place where, yes, the Baalim will come across it, but they're not going to come here often because you left it in the afternoon, then they won't see it until tomorrow. Then you've left it in a place where it's going to sit out for a long period of time, and that's already irresponsible behavior, and therefore you're going to be chayav for the gneiva v'aveda. Okay, we're going to stop here. 11 dines down on the top of Nun Zayin Amud Aleph.